Well, life is wonderful. And the gentleman that's going to share his thoughts with us this evening is absolutely wonderful. And if he was like 50 years older, I'd try to marry him, but he's too young. But he's wonderful. And he's put himself through the school of hard knocks so that he didn't know he was doing that for any, physical brain didn't know that he was doing that so that he could help others that others couldn't help. So he put himself through an awful lot of heartache and an awful lot of trouble in his young years. I didn't meet him until he was old. He's not old enough, but he's old. Nobody even thought that was funny. My goodness, you must have taken that serious. Huh? This is one of the finest men on this earth. But he did. He put himself through the school of hard knocks. And with that, he can help so many people that so many of us could never help. And that is our George Thorne.
I've been coming here for a long time, actually 9 years, and I have a real need. I wondered if you guys would be willing to stand with me and acknowledge Millie for all the love that she's given to thousands of people. Would you be willing to do that? Thank you very much. I've told her that I've been blessed to help some others, but a lot of what I've learned here has helped me to help others. So tonight I want to talk about a special subject, and I'll admit to you all that it's a tough one for me because it's very personal to me, but I also know that it impacts a lot of us in a lot of ways. Tonight I want to talk about God. And I want to talk about addiction, and I want to talk about hope. I also want to say tonight is a very special night because I'm just the opening act. I've invited two men whom I'm proud to call my friends to join me. Both of these men have walked the darkest of journeys for many years and have come out amazing on the other side. And I've asked them to share their stories with you, and they have agreed. But first, I want to start by asking each of you a simple question. What are you addicted to? When we think of addiction, we usually think of alcohol and drugs, which are the big ones. But addiction casts a much wider net. Do you know the United States, with only 5% of the world's population, has over 50% of the world's guns? One man in Las Vegas had so many guns himself, he single-handedly killed more men, more Americans than died in the biggest battle of the Iraq War. We lose 90 lives every day in this country to guns. We spend 4 hours a day on our cell phones, texting and being on the internet. We spend another 5 hours a day watching television, radio, over 9 hours a day consuming all kinds of media. 36 million Americans still smoke cigarettes that cost 450,000 lives a year. We consume 20 tablespoons of sugar a day, 66 pounds a year. 73 million Americans are pre-diabetic. I was. One of my many addictions that I've overcome. So, again, I ask, what are you addicted to? Half of Americans, 1 in 3 children, are overweight. Maybe you're addicted to patterns of thought, negative thinking, codependence, depression, guilt. But let's talk about the big two. 26.5 million Americans are addicted to drugs and alcohol. 1 in 10 adults. Alcohol kills more teenagers than all drugs combined. Half of all adults in this country, their family, has some history of alcoholism or problem drinking. There are 80,000 deaths related to alcohol abuse every year, making it the third highest cause of death in the United States. There were 300 million prescriptions that were written for painkillers last year in the United States, taken by 100 million people. 1 in 6 of Americans' young adults between the ages of 18 and 25 has a substance abuse disorder. Heroin addiction among young adults between 18 and 25 has doubled in the past years, 10 years. So again, I ask, what are you addicted to? But what's interesting to me is, why do we seem to have so many more people with addictions today than ever before? The trend keeps climbing upward. And addiction is a very complex subject. Many factors are involved, biological, physiological, and spiritual, along with environmental and cultural. It's the spiritual that I want to talk to you about tonight. Why? Because I believe the spiritual plays a much bigger role in all of our lives, in our addictions, than many of us are aware of, and I will tell you why. Well, let me give you one more statistic. Up until a few years ago, 90% of people in this country believed in God. Today, people who really think there is God has dropped to 69%. Do you think there's a correlation? What do you think? You can decide for yourself. I believe a lack of spirituality in our lives is a primary cause of addiction. It certainly was for me. Don't take my word for it. Listen to what the second step says in virtually every 12-step program. Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Al-Anon. We came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Let me repeat that. We came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The question becomes, why? Why is this statement in every 12-step program? Why is coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves so incredibly important? The answer is in the last half of the statement. Because the greater power can restore us to our sanity. We don't realize it, but when we're heavily addicted, we're not in our right mind. I don't mean we're crazy, but we are not in our true mind, our greatest mind. We don't know it. When we are heavily addicted, we think we are alone and that no one is with us. We are in this battle all by ourselves. We can't feel the love. There is something wrong with us. We're depressed. We're not good enough. We're not worthy. I have never met anyone who owns up to their addiction who doesn't feel that. I know I did. That's why I think, in my opinion, the war on drugs is a failure. We have lost that war because we don't know who the real enemy is. When we are heavily addicted, we are at war with ourselves. We will do anything we can to get out of our minds. We will do anything to go somewhere else where it has to be better. I know I did. I had my first drink when I was 14 years old. My father gave me a sip of peach brandy. When he left the room, I drank the whole bottle. So this is what it's like to feel normal, I thought. All I want is to feel good like everyone else. Is that too much to ask? So I kept it up. I got good at it. I went through college, did my homework with a six-pack under my belt. Got A's when I did it. I felt good. I won't bother you with the depressing stories after that until I ended up on a platform in Scottsdale, Arizona 30 years ago, not that different than this one. I stood on a stage and I said, my name is George, I'm an alcoholic. Until that moment, I had never believed in God, didn't know what God was, could never buy it was a man in the sky with a beard sitting on a cloud. But when I acknowledged to everyone, most of all myself, I was virtually on my knees. God, help me. Help me. I can't do this by myself. Why was I saying that? Did some part of me know something that I wasn't consciously aware of? Even in my darkest moments, when I was practically in the gutter drunk, a little voice in my head would say to me, George, this isn't who you are. You're more than this. We need to listen to that voice. That voice is your soul telling you who you really are. Your soul knows who you are and why you are here. And God did help me, but it took me a long time to find my greater power. It took me a long time to find my hope. One day I was walking on the beach with my dog, feeling horrible and depressed, totally lost. I looked up, and for a second, the whole world stopped. I saw the birds flying in formation. I saw a pod of porpoise swimming in a single file. The waves flowing gently in and out in rhythm. I was stunned and speechless. There is intelligence to all of this. There is a mind behind everything. This is a system. What does this all mean? I knew right then that I was no longer alone. That was the beginning of my journey with God. It began when I put my ego down long enough to really hear. And man, I got to tell you, for some of us, it takes a long time to put our ego down so that we can really hear. Some of us have to really fight a long time before we're ready to surrender. Fast forward 10 years, that's how long it took me to learn what I know now, and I still don't know anything. If there's one thing I know that will restore us to sanity, it is this. God, Spirit, call it whatever you want to call it, is love. God is love. Forget the man with the beard sitting on a cloud. God is love. This statement defines this church. It's the very first thing Millie said to me when I came here 9 years ago. And we can use that love to heal ourselves. If I knew then what I know now, I would have looked hard every single day to uncover that love that is waiting for us. It takes some work to find it. But when we do, we learn that we are part of that love. We are part of God. As Millie says, we are a bubble of God, like a bubble in the ocean with all the same qualities. That's my story. Now I want to introduce you to the main event. I've invited two very dear friends of mine, Vince Duran and Matt Jensen, I'd like to have come up here now to share their stories with you. They have both been on journeys through hell, but they have come back to be who they truly are. They are great men in my mind. If you define greatness as having courage, commitment, and a relentless desire to work toward a better life, I am very proud to call them my friends. And Matt and Vince, thank you. And who's going to?
Guys, Vince, bear with me. I am absolutely terrified to be up here speaking. Hard enough for me to talk to one person, much less a whole crowd. So let's see. God. I grew up going to Catholic school, so I always knew there was a God. There was never any question about that for me. Never an issue. I think for me, my issue was that I didn't believe in God. I grew up in a highly abusive environment, and it seemed between, or up to about the age of five, it just kept getting worse and worse, and I kept asking God, help me. And I was about 5 years old, and I remember being called into an extra room that we had. And my father had a nice thick leather strap that he proceeded to start using on me. And I remember being very confused as to what was happening. And at one point, I remember saying, God, help me. And nothing happened. And I remember thinking at one moment, I'm going to die. And I remember the sheer terror that I was feeling. And then I only remember bits and pieces. I remember at one point, so what happened, I left my body, basically. And I came back. And remember thinking, the only thing I thought, somebody set me on fire. And I left again. From that day forward, I was so angry that I thought, I'm not even going to give God a chance. And so for about the next 4 years, the abuse continued. And I... It was so amazing because I figured somehow on my own I have to figure out how I'm going to get through this. And I learned to shut off physical pain. And I remember thinking, why physical pain? I still had to feel inside. And so after about 4 more years of that, I was about 9, and I discovered drugs. But they only went so far. And so by the time I was a teenager, I had graduated to opiates. And could never find a way to get through the shame and the guilt. And I needed hope. And I was in my early 20s, and a near overdose really kind of shook me. And it was a big wake-up call because I realized that I wanted to live and I wanted to experience life. But I didn't know how to do that. And again, still the shame and the guilt that I had carried with me was quite a bit. And all this time I was still carrying that anger and at this point trying to hate God for feeling so abandoned. And it opened me up to the fact that that's what I was searching for. I was searching for hope. I wanted to feel normal. I wanted to feel human. And it was the drugs that allowed me to do that, but I was still so shut off from other parts of my life. And it was interesting, because God being God, somehow managed to leave me a trail of breadcrumbs. And as I certainly wasn't able to hear him. And strangely, it led me to Millie, and to Matt, and to George. And I started to be able to see that God had never abandoned me. It was that I was so angry I couldn't hear him. And in that trail of breadcrumbs, he showed me a way back to wholeness. But I would have to go back and face those demons again, and I would see that in there, you know, being able to shut off pain was quite a gift, actually. Because I learned through that there was a difference between submitting, which is I had done my whole life, and surrender. And that surrender, I had learned that, or I discovered that shutting out pain is having to go into it. It's acknowledging it, facing it, and through that is how I'm able to shut it off. It gets very intense, but that was part of the process. So through all that, there was all these little gifts that have allowed me now to make a shift and see things from a very different perspective. And it's actually there's like a roadmap there on how to heal from all that. So I think that's about it. Thanks.
I'm Matt. I almost want to say I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not going to. I'm so used to speaking. Anyways, thank you, George, for your share. Thank you, Vince, and I love you, Millie. And you know what? It's amazing to be at this church. This church absolutely changed my life. It's good to see a lot of familiar faces. You know, I see the light because, you know, I live in the light a lot now. I live in the light. You know, I get teared up thinking about the way my life is today compared to how it used to be. It was a lot different. Something I wanted to share real quick, because George touched on the second step in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, back in the 30s when it was started, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous started it based on a Christian group called the Oxford Groups, who had the six tenets for a way of life. And Alcoholics Anonymous further broke it into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So back when the 12 steps were first founded and started, it was based on God. That's all it was. It was not a self-help group at all. It was based on finding a spiritual connection with God, because there were guys that were suffering from this disease of drug addiction, and it was a spiritual sickness, and there was no answers for it. Guys like me were getting locked up in insane asylums because there was no hope. And through that group, they founded Alcoholics Anonymous, which was when they started, you know, finding out a way, a process through the 12 steps to bring people to God. That's all it was. And back then, the recovery rate for people like me was very high because it was God-centered. And now it's gone to like 5% or something crazy like that of recovery, because God has been taken out of it. And it's the most important thing. But I wanted to share a little bit about my upbringing. I grew up with no God at all. I didn't experience God until I got sober in 2005. Up until that point, I won't get too much into the details, but I grew up in a very non-God household, very traumatic, very abusive, very alcoholic. It was not a fun place to be. And for me, I escaped through drugs and alcohol, because it was the first time that I was able to not feel afraid and feel okay with myself. So I started about 12 years old, and I ran with that hard and heavy for many years, and got in lots of trouble. I ended up in many treatment centers, jails, you know, quitting high school, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I was hooked on crack cocaine at one point, at a young age, at 17 years old. Without getting too much into the story, my life was pretty tough. You know, I had a lot of drug addiction and a lot of alcoholism, very self-destructive, self-centered life that I lived. And didn't care about anybody else, my family or anybody around me. I really didn't. It was about me getting what I wanted to get when I wanted to get it, and I didn't care who got in the way of me. And in 2005, through nothing that I had done myself, nothing besides the grace of God, I had an experience where God came into my life and showed me the truth of what my life was. And I got sober that day. That was a spiritual experience for me that absolutely changed my life. You know, it, and I didn't realize it was God for many years, or probably I didn't realize it was God for months after that, but I knew that some kind of a miracle had taken place. And it was beyond me, because I had wanted to stop for so many years and was never able to on my own power. So, you know, if people tell you that it's a matter of self-will, they're wrong. It's a matter of finding a power through God to get sober. It's the only thing for a guy like me. And, you know, it's, you know, my life is absolutely amazing. It's beyond my wildest dreams now. You know, it's crazy. I have, I have close friends. I have people in my life. I have support. I have peace in my heart. I own my own company. When I first got sober, I was a construction guy, which it was a very respectable job. And through God, now I own a design engineering company that's very successful. We're growing rapidly. I've got employees. I mean, it's beyond my wildest dreams. And that's just an external benefit for the way that I feel inside, if that makes any sense to anybody. I mean, that's, my life now revolves around helping others and in bringing hope to people. That, I mean, I get teared up because it's so powerful. That's, I feel blessed that I get to be sober today and be healthy and happy. And it's an amazing walk, an amazing life. I got baptized 3 weeks ago. You know, like a guy like me got baptized 3 weeks ago, and I love it, and I couldn't be more happy. You know, it's talk to some of the people I used to run with and hang out with, and if they found out that I was in church talking, standing up front saying I saw the light, they would probably, you know, what happened to this guy? But you know what? That's the freedom that I feel. Like I don't feel that self-conscious feeling anymore. I feel like confident and happy and whole, and that's what I was searching for my whole life. And you know, that doesn't mean that you know, other things don't come up, you know, like George was talking about. I've looked at, you know, codependency in my life. I've looked at sugars and foods and, and anything that I can use to kind of check out from the reality of what's going on in my life. And what I've found out is that the closer that I get to God and the more involved that I get, these things just drop away from me. That's the miracle of it. And so, like, it's almost embarrassing for me to tell you guys, like, that I run around listening to Christian music and praying to God, like, most days, all the time. I'm all about it. You know, I get up. I mean, I was up at 5 o'clock in the morning yesterday doing a two-hour prayer group with men. I mean, this is, if you guys knew me before, this is not something that I had in my plan for my life, but it is not something that I would want to ever change. I get to come here and speak to groups of people about the hope that there is for recovery from drugs and alcohol, because it does not have to be a struggle. It can be a really good, like, fun, exciting life. So if there's anybody here that's struggling with any sort of addiction, you know, just get closer to God and you'll find your way. Thank you.
I think you can see why I'm proud to call these men my friends. And I think all three of us would agree that we've experienced a miracle in our own lives. And I've decided what a miracle is that it's simply something that God knows that we don't understand. God does miracles every day, every single day. We are the benefactors of what we call miracles. Each one of us, I think when we started, never thought this was possible. What Matt just said about what his friends would say. I've had a very strange experience of going back working with people I worked with 35 years ago, and I hadn't seen it for 35 years. And the first thing one of them said to me is, "George, let's go to the bar and have a drink." I said, "Awesome, let's go." So we went into the bar, sat down. He ordered a Long Island iced tea, and I said, "I'll have an iced tea." For those of you who don't know, a Long Island iced tea is basically every kind of alcohol you can put in one, you know. And he looked at me like, "What's wrong with you?" And he couldn't believe, you know, how much I changed. So I hear you, you know. The change is overwhelming. And I remember telling Millie one time, I went to a Christmas party here at the church. And I was kind of flabbergasted because I had never seen that many people sober having fun without alcohol. And I was really wondering, I needed to look under the table and see, you know, where the wine was hidden, you know. So I want to conclude with two thoughts. One is, in my mind, the most important speech for anyone who's ever gone through addiction in a heavy way. The last century, perhaps the greatest speaker of the last century, Winston Churchill, was invited to talk at an Eastern Ivy League school, college. And the chancellor of the university stood up and said, you know, all these great things about Winston Churchill, the great orator that he was, statesman, helped end World War II, oversaw his country during the bombing. Finally, Sir Winston stood up, walked to the podium, and said, "Never, never, 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 never give up," and sat down. Thank you very much.
I believe three of the greatest men you'll ever meet. Have you ever heard money's the root of all evil? Have you ever heard that? Isn't it? Nobody would be out there making that stuff look good and sound so good and if they weren't getting money, getting that stuff packaged just right to get out there. What do you think? You agree with me? I love these kids. And I love you, George, too. He's not a kid anymore, but he's absolutely wonderful. I'm so thankful God sends pretty people in here. like all of you, and if I haven't gotten acquainted enough with you, please give me a chance, huh?